Good morning. I think, you know, I'm disappointed that someone didn't jump up. We've got probably 12 or, you know, at least a dozen or two dozen folks that could talk about grass legume mixtures there. So we could have filled in that spot. But anyway, what I wanted to present today is some work that we were doing on looking at grazing canola. And that sounds like as foreign a concept probably to you as it was to me when we first started this process. But we found some very interesting results. I want to share or acknowledge my co-authors on this, Dr. Leanne Dillard, who is a postdoc now at University Park there in Pennsylvania with USDA, Sam Ingram, who was a master's student with us in the program, who is now a county extension agent down in southeast Georgia, and Dr. Lawton Stewart, who's a beef cattle nutritionist at the University of Georgia as well. So canola, for those of you that are kind of as unfamiliar with canola as I am, just a little bit of an overview about what canola is. Canola is actually kind of a brand name. It's to kind of rename rapeseed, Brassica rapa. It stands for Canadian oil low acid, and the low acid part of that comes from the fact that the seed, the oil from the seed actually contains less than 2% erucic acid. And it also has less than 30 micromoles of glucosinolates, easy for everyone else to say. It has about 6% saturated fats. It's a very common vegetable oil that we use in the U.S. And becoming increasingly common. If you look at the domestic consumption there in the green bars, pretty substantial amount of utilization of that. And the production has not nearly kept up with demand. Most of that is now imported into the U.S., mainly because most of our growing areas for that in North America are in the prairie areas here of southern Canada and on into North Dakota and a little bit here in northwest Minnesota. We also have some areas here in the southern Great Plains and over in Idaho area as well. We do produce it in the southeast. It's just not a very large amount. And if we really were to look at the largest potential area for it to expand would be in the southeast. That's where the greatest potential for expansion would be in terms of available acreage and that sort of thing. In addition to that, if you look at the yield trials, there's a nationwide yield trial for canola. And we have a site in Georgia. And our yields are typically 25, maybe even 30 or 40% greater than the national yields. So there's a real opportunity for expansion in the southeast. And we have seen some expansion in the southeast over the last few years. Georgia has been kind of one of the primary areas where that expansion has occurred. You can see here in the last few years we've bumped up things, and this trend has continued into 2015. South Carolina also has some, and one of the reasons for that is we have a processing facility that's just over the state line into Georgia, adjacent to South Carolina. So it's becoming increasingly important for our area of the world. But the question has come up, can canola be grazed? If you look at some of the popular press articles in Hay & Forage Grower magazine and some of the other magazines, there have been articles about producers who in the southern Great Plains in particular have been grazing canola. So how well does that work? Well, a little bit of a literature review. If you look at some work that's coming out of Australia, and probably some of the best work that's being done on grazing canola is in Australia. And a fellow by the name of Kierkegaard there has a team of researchers who have estimated that dual-purpose canola is quite profitable. Over a four-year period, they averaged a $1,230 greater gross margin per acre compared to canola alone. And if you look at the net profitability, that was substantially greater. We'll talk more about profitability toward the end here. So our objective was to determine what kind of grazing management practices we could impose on winter-type dual-purpose canola in the southeast. And we wanted to assess animal performance, evaluating the grazing resilience of the canola to make sure that we weren't doing too much damage to it, and then to measure the impact of early season grazing on not only the oilseed yield, but also oil content. This work was done at the J. Phil Campbell Research and Education Center. For those of you that are familiar with it, this was the USDA Research Center there in Watkinsville up until a couple years ago. And they had some really nice pastures there. They call those the fescue pastures, mainly because that was where a lot of the fescue toxicosis research was done over the years. But what we did was we imposed four treatments, canola with no grazing, just grazing, growing it for canola, no grazing on it. Canola early light grazing, and the objective there was really to terminate grazing at the growth stage of 3.0. According to the work by Kierkegaard and others there in Australia, that was kind of the growth stage which you want to protect it. And that's where the bolting begins to occur and when the elongation of the stem begins to occur. The canola late or heavy grazing was a little bit heavier defoliation, and grazing termination there was at 3.1. And then on winter wheat as a comparison, just so that we had an apples-to-apples comparison on a potential other stalker system that is widely used, looking at winter wheat. So what did we do? We established canola. We used a variety called Inspiration, which is a hybrid type of canola variety. We planted on 19-centimeter rows at 4.5 kilos of fungicide-treated seed to the hectare. We actually probably made a bit of a mistake there because the fungicide treatment is actually not labeled for grazing research or grazing purposes, but don't tell. Winter wheat, we used a variety called AGS 2038. We planted those on 20-centimeter rows at 82 seeds per meter. Nitrogen fertilization was basically on the same scheme as what we would use for canola production. We did not differentiate from that, and we did the same basic thing for winter wheat as well. Grazing management perspective, what we did was we had these pastures that are roughly 2 acres each, and we split those into halves so that we could flip-flop back and forth and give it a little bit of rotation and rest. We utilized two stalkers per paddock, and then we also provided a bale of Bermuda grass hay just as roughage, just for them to pick at. If you're familiar with brassicas and how moist they are and how highly digestible they are, you don't want to be standing anywhere close to the rear end of one of those animals if they're on straight brassicas. So the roughage there was to kind of slow things down. The grazing was initiated January 23rd, and that date is significant, and I'll come back to that in a moment, and then terminated March 14th of 2014. The forward sampling, we did weekly rising plate meter measurements, biweekly destructive sampling, and then we harvested seed on June 24th and 25th. We did all of this by hand, and then we took that back to the thresher to actually thresh it in a location. Rather than trying to, all we had was a plot harvester, and it's hard to harvest 2 acres of canola with a plot harvester, so we did this by hand. And then we also determined seed oil content using NMR. I'm not exactly sure what that stands for at the moment. I've lost that. But we utilized one of our processors to actually assess that seed oil content for us. The experiment was designed in a randomized complete block. We used Proc Mix to analyze that, and we had 4 replications. Unless I state otherwise, the alpha level was set at 0.05. So, the results. And by the way, we do get snow in Georgia from time to time. And shortly after starting this experiment, we actually got a little bit of snow and ice, and that became a little bit relevant here. Now, all of the figures that I'm going to show you are variations on this same basic thing. The dates will be along the bottom side. In this case, we have herbage mass on the y-axis. Canola no grazing is in the blue lines. Canola early grazing, or where we terminated that grazing early, was the dotted lines. The green solid lines is canola late grazing, where we would keep grazing until a late termination date, and then the black line would be winter wheat. So if we look at herbage mass, we never really developed a tremendous amount of material out there, and this is above a 1-inch stubble height, basically. I can get my pointer to work here. One thing that I do want to point out is that shortly after we put those animals out on pasture, lo and behold, we got a nice storm that came through. And then about a week later, we had about 6 inches of snow that came through. So it snow for us is relatively short-lived. A day or two later, it's gone. But that did kind of press down the foliage and made a difference in the yields that we were seeing out there, in the, especially in the leaf area. If we look at the leaf area index here, and again, I'll throw in the markers there for those significant weather events, particularly for the winter wheat, it just kind of set it down on the ground. And we also see that it had a bit of a suppression effect there on the canola as well. We measured also NDVI, and that's probably a better measurement of ground cover and how much leaf area is actually there. The leaf area index is really more light interception, to be honest with you, especially when it gets compressed like that. And so the NDVI kind of shows the better differentiation between those. And what's interesting is that we really did not see a tremendous difference here until kind of later in the season, with the canola late grazing here was grazed much more severely. But even with the canola early termination grazing here, notice that it's not really all that different from the canola no grazing, which is really a function of the weather that damaged the non-grazed areas. So what you had on the early grazed areas is that you had more green growth. It was coming back. So what ended up happening, if we look at all of the harvest biomass, the harvested biomass was actually greatest from the canola treatments there, was greatest from the early grazing, and but all of these were not really significantly different from one another. The seed yield, however, was different from one another. We did get more wheat grain as a result of this, but if you look at within the canola treatments, actually the early grazing, at least at a tendency of a 0.1 level, we were getting more yield off of the early grazed areas than the areas that had been grazed, or that had not been grazed. And the reason for that, again, is because of the removal of the foliage that had been damaged by the cold weather. I believe that's what's happened there, is that it removed the damaged material. It allowed new growth to come in and actually benefited the yields. Not really too much going on there with oil content percentage-wise, but if you look at oil yield, statistically speaking, not much difference there across the oil yield. It's really the yield of the oil seed that was different. Let's look now at animal performance. At starting out, they were all, as one would expect, all basically the same. At the end, there really wasn't much significant difference there at all. And if you look at the average day of the gains on the grazing treatments, they were all gaining about 1.2 kilograms per head per day. So pretty good result. The kind of gains that you were seeing there are very good. And then if we look at gain per hectare, because with the early grazing we were actually not stocking it as heavy, we used put and take grazing, so the grazers were not as common there. So if you look at gain per hectare, it was a little bit less. Fast forwarding now into the economics, whether or not this makes any sense or not. And if we look at the calf value and the crop, and then both of them together, we can see that versus canola no grazing, it's very profitable to look at grazing these based on, again, just 1 year's worth of data. One point I should make, though, for us in Georgia, selling wheat is nigh impossible. It's a very difficult market to sell wheat. So it's really challenging for us to sell wheat, and most of the time canola is going to be a lot easier sell, and so really that is probably more generalized than across the southeast, across the southern plains perhaps as well. And for us, wheat is just not going to be an option. So canola, in conclusion here, canola does produce adequate biomass to support gains, and it can be very economically beneficial compared to grain-only canola. Dual-purpose canola does have similar animal gains and profitability to dual-purpose winter wheat. And based on 1 year's worth of information, the canola early grazing termination was a better and superior grazing management technique to the late grazing. questions on that?
We have time for one question, or a question or two.
Oh, good question. How much Bermuda grass hay was consumed? They hardly touched it. And honestly, it would have been, if we looked at it on a daily basis, it would have been just a blip. Once they acclimated to the brassicas, and we had an acclimation area, we had an area that was planted where we got them used to grazing canola, but once they did that, they really didn't take on too much of that. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Ned.